coming out of COVID, those who run nursing homes say this is a historically tough time for their industry.
I've been in this business for 25 years, and I would have to say I've never seen a more challenging time.
You'll hear from the president and CEO of Bloomington-based Heritage Enterprises, Ben Hart, just ahead on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm Ryan Denham. You'll also hear about the state wanting to get a million new electric vehicles on the road and how we plan to get there from here. Plus, a preview of the 27th annual Hauntsert at Normal West and Normal Community High Schools.
It's not like we're just playing the Addams Family year after year after year.
Oh, far from it. Normal West Director of Orchestras Kim Baim talks about the importance of music education and playing music together once again. Those stories and a Bloomington Normal news update just ahead. This is WGLT's news magazine Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. It's a tough time for long-term care facilities right now. Two of them in Springfield recently announced they're closing, and others around the nation are not in great shape. One of the Springfield nursing homes belongs to Bloomington-based Heritage Enterprises. Ben Hart is the president and CEO of Heritage, and in this interview with Charlie Schlenker, Hart says that times are historically bad.
I've been in this business for 25 years, and I would have to say I've never seen a more challenging time. And even, you know, in discussing this with my father, who is the founder of Heritage, he goes back 58 years, and he would have to agree with that.
There are several reasons for it. Let's start with labor supply. The labor force shortage is nationwide in many sectors. Is it worse for you?
Well, I'll say it's worse for healthcare. And certainly here in Bloomington and Normal, all you have to do is drive down Veterans Parkway and see the help wanted signs, whether it be in food service or retail or any service industry. But I would say it's much more acute in the healthcare world because folks are choosing to leave healthcare altogether. They're having opportunities in other industries. And certainly the stress of what's going on with the COVID pandemic is playing a big role in that.
How short are you corporation-wide, and how short is the industry of the bodies it needs to operate at full staff?
Well, I can tell you just from Heritage's own numbers, we're several hundred staff members short. We currently have about 4,000 people that work for us or the facilities that we manage throughout Illinois, and we would be several hundred people short, 300 to 500 people.
In any particular sector dominating?
Certainly the clinical positions. And what I mean by that are the licensed nurses and then the nurses' aides. Those seem to be the most impacted positions. And they're also the most critical because those are the hands-on caregivers for our residents or patients.
How much of it is wages? What is the wage for a long-term care facility worker compared to a hospital nurse or some other facility nurse?
Well, I would really say it's more of an issue of supply and demand. Clearly, there's a huge demand for nurses and nursing assistants right now because of the hospitals being full, because of the needs in caring for folks, whether it be with COVID or just in general. There was a shortage of nurses entering the pandemic that has only exacerbated over time. And that has really led to the rise of newer issues that we're facing. And probably the biggest one are what we call nurse agencies, or you might call them temp agencies. In the hospital world, they would call them traveling nurses. But it's the temp workers in nursing and nursing assistant positions.
How much of the workforce are they supplying?
It's becoming an increasing percentage of nurses and nursing aides. And it's becoming very problematic for providers because, first of all, the nursing agencies they're unregulated, they're unlicensed, and they largely are unchecked by any kind of governmental or regulatory body. And they're just not held to the same standards that providers of healthcare are. So whether it be nursing facilities or hospitals or home health agencies, really there's not a lot of vetting of the staff that they hire and provide, other than making sure that people have valid licenses with the state. So there's not the same level of background checking, drug testing, training and education, proficiency testing. It really puts providers in a difficult position because we already have a lack of staff to begin with. And we're under statutes and regulations with the state of Illinois where we have to have minimum staffing standards. We can't just arbitrarily choose, well, I want one nurse on this shift or two nurses.
So you have to use the agencies to make up the difference.
Exactly.
Why are nurses going with the agencies instead of looking for full-time positions with long-term care facility companies that have benefits?
Well, it gets back to this equation of the supply and demand equation. Right now, workers do have the upper hand in healthcare because of, you know, the need for nurses and nursing assistants. And the rise of the agencies have really stepped into become almost predatory in nature. And so we find them camped outside of our buildings, and they recruit our staff as they're leaving their shifts, and they give them the promise of being able to work for higher wages, which you can't blame workers for wanting to pursue that. And I certainly support nurses and nurses' aides getting everything that they deserve. The problem is that the nurse agencies now create an extra layer of expense in the healthcare system, because if they're charging $90 an hour for an RN, which is kind of our going rate, the agency takes half of that right off the top for their administrative costs. And then the nurse is usually getting half, if that, of the $90 that they're charging us.
Doesn't sound like a good equation for the nurse.
Well, sometimes it is, because sometimes, again, due to the desperation of providers, those agencies can charge exorbitant rates because we need those staff in order to take care of our folks. And it may result in the nurse or the nurse's aide getting more than the typical hourly wage as an employee. But the issue or the problem here is that it's creating this additional cost to the healthcare system, with the agency getting this basically 100% markup above what the nurse might get.
So how much has that added to your cost structure, the agency piece of it?
I'll give you some raw numbers from our facility down in Springfield, which we just announced the closure of. Year over year, our labor costs are up 41%. That's largely due to agency being the factor in driving that. We went from the year 2020 to having a per patient day, or basically what it costs us to care for a patient per day, the labor expense being in 2020, $144. And in 2021, year to date, that's risen to $203.
Is it even possible to make up that squeeze?
It's not. That was the issue. We as a healthcare provider are primarily funded by the Medicaid and the Medicare systems. Those are fixed rate reimbursement to us. And so their payment to us doesn't flex upward as our expenses go up. So here we had a situation in Springfield where our labor costs went up 41% year over year, and our total costs went up 35% year over year, primarily because of wages. And our payment from the Medicaid system went up 7%. Year to date in 2021, it was costing us on a daily basis $279 to take care of somebody, and Medicaid was paying us $194. So we were losing $85 a day just for having somebody in our doors and taking care of them.
You have to take some Medicaid patients to be eligible for other kinds of reimbursement. But how do you make that balance?
I would first say that as a healthcare provider, I think we owe society the ability to equally care for everyone, and regardless of people's ability to pay. But the Medicaid system should recognize that, and they should pay providers what at least costs them to provide that care. And that's where the state of Illinois and that's where the Medicaid system has fallen short. If they don't recognize that sooner or later, and sooner, I would hope, I think it's going to put a lot of stress on the long-term care system. And I think you will see more and more providers either exit providing skilled nursing care or being forced to do so.
What percentage of your total beds company-wide are Medicaid beds?
Right now, of all the residents that we take care of throughout our system, it's about 50 to 55% of our residents are reimbursed through the Medicaid system.
There are going to be fewer care facilities, fewer beds in total industry-wide at a time when the baby boomers are retiring and aging out and entering facilities in larger numbers. That doesn't sound very good.
It's not a good equation. And I think our state of Illinois and our General Assembly members need to wake up and realize what's going on in long-term care before it's too late. And things really need to be addressed on both a short-term and a longer-term basis. And what I mean by that is I think we do need assistance for the long-term care industry in the short run to make us be able to bridge the gap and get through the pandemic and make sure that providers are reimbursed for their expenses and lost revenues due to low occupancies, as well as, you know, the additional measures and PPE and equipment that we have to have.
Should that come from the state or should that come from the feds?
Well, I think it's going to need to come from both. On the state, I think it's got to come from the Illinois Department of Healthcare and Family Services administering the Medicaid program. On the federal basis, it's really got to come from CMS, which administers the Medicare program.
And then longer term.
Longer term, I think that with the Illinois Medicaid system, they're currently looking at reimbursement for providers, and I think that needs to be seriously looked at to make sure there's equity in the system. What they're essentially trying to do is shift the costs onto everyone else, insurance companies or people paying privately out of their own pockets.
In Springfield's case, it's the second largest facility in Sangamon County. What distinguishes that from other facilities that are probably not going to close?
We had some unique circumstances in Springfield. Again, I outlined the cost imbalance and the reimbursement imbalance with Springfield. But for us, one of the biggest difficulties with our Springfield property was that it's a four-story building, and we had to run it almost as four individual nursing homes due to each of the four floors. And so it added a layer of cost to operating that facility, too. It was a very high percentage of Medicaid recipients that we cared for in that building, and they just didn't keep pace with the increases in the wages we were having to pay.
Are you looking hard at any facility of yours in Bloomington Normal for potential closure?
No, our Bloomington Normal facilities are strong. They're very healthy, and they're very much needed. We're an important part of the local healthcare community.
That's Heritage Enterprises CEO Ben Hart speaking with Charlie Schlenker. Hart says the majority of long-term care facilities in the country are having the same inability to accept new patients. That in turn means hospitals may be more full than they need to be because they can't place patients in what amounts to rehab facilities. You're listening to Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Governor J.B. Pritzker last month signed a massive new law overhauling Illinois' energy portfolio to combat climate change. But the state is looking at a long road to another goal in that new law, getting 1 million new electric vehicles on the road. IPR's Carolyn Kobzanski reports.
The so-called Climate and Equitable Jobs Act puts Illinois on the path to getting 100% of its energy from renewable sources like wind or solar power in the next three decades. The ambitious climate package also has a secondary goal to reduce carbon emissions in the state. By 2030, Governor J.B. Pritzker wants to see 1 million new electric vehicles displace traditional fuel-burning cars on Illinois roads. Emissions from cars and trucks have overtaken coal plants as the largest source of pollution in Illinois in recent years, boosted by the proliferation of rideshare and demands for near-instant delivery for online shoppers. But Jack Darin, the director of Sierra Club Illinois, is optimistic that investing in electric vehicles or EVs will pay dividends everywhere.
We get not only the savings as drivers from not having to put gas in our cars anymore, we get the cleaner air, but also hopefully we're creating good jobs in manufacturing for Illinois and making these vehicles and these charging technologies.
According to state data, there are currently 26,000 EVs registered in Illinois, but the new climate law includes $4,000 tax credits meant to incentivize Illinoisans to buy new EVs beginning next summer. That's on top of an existing $7,500 federal tax credit for new EV buyers. But if a million new Illinoisans do start driving EVs in the next 9 years, the state will need much more infrastructure to support the shift, including a massive investment in charging stations. Illinois currently has about 2,200 charging stations statewide, but it'll need to amp that number to about 100,000 by 2030. That's according to Megha Lakchara, policy director at electric vehicle charger maker EVBox. But the price tag, at least for now, isn't cheap.
If you bought something with a single port, the hardware costs approximately $2,000. And installation depends on the electric wiring and the infrastructure upgrade that is needed. So it can range from anything from $2,000 to $6,000.
Those infrastructure costs will be more expensive where communities aren't as dense. Lakchara says this is a complicated undertaking, but not impossible. But the longer the state takes to implement the infrastructure, the harder it will get.
They can accommodate the influx of all these electric vehicles within the next 4 or 5 years. The problem is if you do nothing, based on the current infrastructure, it could get difficult. You could have choke points.
The Illinois business community largely opposed the massive climate law, citing increased energy costs. Trade groups are hopeful the state can attract new EV-centric businesses. Lakchara's company, EVBox, put down roots in Illinois last year when it made Libertyville its North American headquarters. And Illinois is already home to 2 EV manufacturing plants. Mark Densler, the president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association, says there's no reason that Illinois, at the heart of the U.S. interstate highway system with a major city and an international airport, shouldn't get serious consideration as the home base for new EV companies.
We have a well-skilled population here in the state of Illinois. Workforce is certainly very important.
However, Densler warns that property taxes and the higher energy costs his group opposed in the climate law could give companies pause when they're weighing whether to invest in Illinois. But there are things Illinois could do to sweeten the deal for EV manufacturers, Densler says, like speeding up the permit process for new ventures and giving out tax incentives. State Representative Dave Vella, a Democrat from Rockford, has already introduced legislation to provide EV companies with those incentives.
So we're talking about tens of thousands of new jobs, hundreds of thousands of man hours of construction to put this infrastructure in place. It really could boom our economy back to post-World War II times.
Lawmakers are currently considering the proposal, which includes creating tax credits for EV manufacturers and EV battery makers, in addition to utilities incorporating renewable energy into their grids. I'm Caroline Kopsansky.
And I'm Ryan Denham, and you're listening to Sound Ideas. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Turns out there is a lot more to Halloween music than the Addams Family and Monster Mash. Normal West and Normal Community High Schools will host their annual Hauntsert on Thursday, October 28th. Normal West Director of Orchestras Kim Baim gave me a preview of this year's not-so-spooky playlist.
It is in the 27th year, which is insane to me, just with continuing that year after year after year. Last year it was virtual, which was really great, but we're excited to have it in person again. Every year it's a different theme. So there have been a spooktacular theme in the past. This year it's animals and particularly escape. So we'll let people come to the concert to find out what that means.
Not everything in this town lasts 27 years. Based on what you've learned about Hauntsert, what makes this thing so special?
I think the themes have made it continue because it's not the same thing every year. It's a little different and with different music. It's not like we're just playing the Addams Family year after year after year. That's not even one of our pieces this year, but that's one that always comes up around Halloween. So definitely the different themes have kept it going and just the excitement around it. There's decorations that go into the auditorium. And it's something the students look forward to, especially if they've come and seen it as a kindergartner, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, and then get to get build that excitement through their junior high music program and then be a part of it once they're in high school.
What songs are your kids most excited to perform this time around?
I would say we've had a lot of fun with The Lion King. There's different themes from that, including I Just Can't Wait to Be King and Can You Feel the Love Tonight and Circle of Life.
This child is getting wildly out of wing.
So that's been really cool to learn, along with a medley of songs from the movie Sing.
It's like I got this music in my mind saying it's gonna be all right.
But there are some classical pieces too. So Swan Lake by Tchaikovsky has been really fun to work on as well.
What's the most challenging piece that the students are tackling this time around?
So we have a waltz by Strauss that is very fast and exciting. But it is very challenging to put together as well.
COVID took away a lot of things. I know you did this was done virtually last year, but I wonder if you could put into words, what does it mean to you and your students to be able to be together again physically and to be making music for other people?
Oh, it's so exciting. Last week and this week, both the Normal Community and Normal West choirs have started putting on their performances. And to see the excitement from those teachers of having all of their choirs perform together and the audience returning has been really cool to see, and I'm really excited to experience that myself. Last year at Chittix, we did an outdoor concert, which was really great, but it's not the same as when you're all in the gym together and you have those traditions set in place. So I'm excited to be able to continue the concert tradition in the auditorium.
Why is music education so important?
Well, I guess I can speak to this on my own personal level a little bit. I started playing viola 16 years ago, which I tell my students now, I've been playing viola longer than you've been alive, which is mind blowing. But I decided pretty early on when I was 13 that I wanted to be a music teacher. And I just really found joy in those music classes, but also a challenge. Playing an instrument isn't something that you can pick up one day and you're going to master it in a week. It takes time to really build those skills, build up your reading, your rhythms, just your intonation, your ears. And it's really exciting to see when those things come together. As a music student and as a music teacher, I think just being in music classes builds a lot of character because you're not going to get it in a day. And it forces students to see the longer road ahead, and they can celebrate the little successes along the way. But it takes years and years and years to master it. So there's a lot of perseverance that has to happen within a music class.
So the concert that's coming up on Thursday, October 28th, there are going to be two performances of it that night?
There are two performances. Our first one kicks off at 6 o'clock, and our second one is at 7:30. But if you would like to come a bit earlier, there is trick-or-treating in both schools around 5:30 for the first show and 7 o'clock for the second show. And there's also a zoo encounter since our theme has animals in it.
That's Normal West Director of Orchestras, Kim Bame. Bame and her 80 students, plus another group at Normal Community High School, take the stage for their 27th annual concert on Thursday, October 28th. They happen simultaneously at both schools. Thank you for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal today, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. You can find all our Sound Ideas interviews at WGLT.org, and you can find links there to subscribe to the Sound Ideas podcast. We're on Spotify, Apple, Google, and NPR One. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT, and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.